Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. My name is Susan Goodson, your host for Our Stories Matter. And my guest today is a guest who I have known for quite some time. And what I do on this show is we dig into how alcoholism and drug addiction affects us as individuals, as people, and as families. Because business is great, but if you're distracted because you have a drinking problem or you have someone you love who has a drinking problem, it's hard to stay focused. So our topic today is, can one ever forgive themselves for hurting others even when it wasn't their intention? And our leading lady today is Julie Henry. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Susan.
Okay, so please tell everyone a little bit about you.
I am 64 years old. I am an alcoholic. I am currently between jobs. I am single, which is unusual to be between jobs, but I am, and I'm not panicking. I feel God will lead me where he wants me to be, and I'm trying to stay sober, and actually I'm in a great place.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. So, you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so the first question is, when did you first know you had a problem with alcohol?
When I was in my 20s, I overdrank sometimes, but I thought, of course, that was just like, you know, everybody was partying and such. But it was when I was in my late 30s that it was extremely apparent.
Okay, so So it didn't happen when you were a teenager?
No, not at all.
Okay. So when you were sober, what took you back out? You were sober for a while, and then you went back out and drank again. So
yes,
what took you out, and why did you start drinking again?
Actually, it wasn't like anything bad happened in my life. I actually had just gotten away from the program. I was sober over 15 years and hadn't been attending meetings in years, but had no issues with it, didn't think about it, didn't want to drink. And I was divorced and my daughter was out of the house, and I thought maybe I was just depressed. And I started playing with that thought, and a couple other people said, "We can't believe you're an alcoholic. You're around it all the time and it doesn't even bother you." I'd worked in restaurants for years, and so I just kind of let myself be talked into, or I talked myself into thinking that I really wasn't an alcoholic and maybe I could drink okay now, you know, like a gentleman, as they say in the program. And I gave it a shot, and I did okay for a while, and then it caught up with me, and it was a 5 or 6 year cycle of drinking and then staying sober for months, and then drinking and back and forth, and then drinking for months and then not drinking. And it was just a horrible, horrible pattern I got into that I couldn't seem to get out of.
Did you ever lose a job because of your drinking?
I never did. I'm very lucky. I quit a job because of when I went to rehab, I quit my job, but no, I never lost a job.
So you are what I've often heard people say, you're a high-functioning alcoholic. You know, you didn't have, you didn't lose your job, you didn't lose your family, you didn't go broke because of drinking. You were like, hey, I'm okay. I mean, life is pretty good. So,
I lost a lot of respect. I lost respect, and I let people down terribly.
But more importantly, you let yourself down.
Oh, yes. I didn't see that so much at the time. I saw it more like, what was I doing to other people? How could I do this to people that believed in me and trusted me?
Yeah, yeah. It's hard when, you know, when you hear in the readings in the 12-step program, they talk about, you know, alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It doesn't make sense. You know, you're sitting there and you say, nothing really bad happened. I didn't drink as a kid. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just overdrank. But it just sort of moves in there quietly. And then
I have to interrupt you because I did skip one big thing. I didn't lose a job or anything like that. I was in a terrible car accident.
Ah.
Oh yeah, and a DUI. So I forget that we haven't mentioned that yet. Oh yes, I hit a pole and that was really ugly and I thought I will never do this again. And I was in a meeting the next morning saying, "Do you see the pole down the street? I did that." I was it was terrible. And I made it about 9 months after that, and I drank again. So talk about feeling horrible about yourself. Like, how could you do that? I could have killed somebody.
So can you ever, what have you done in the past year and a half to help get over the guilt and shame? Because how do you not feel guilty? How do you make friends with, this is a disease. I chose to drink again. People were hurt. But I did the best I could. I mean, how do you come to terms with the guilt that you probably have fought with off and on since the accident?
Right. Well, what I realized is that guilt and that shame was one of the big reasons why I couldn't get out of the loop and couldn't stay sober. It was one of the, I always say there were like four components that really catapulted my sobriety. And that was one of them. I had to forgive myself. That was one of the biggest pieces. And I all the time I was struggling in those 5 or 6 years, I kept beating myself up thinking that would keep me sober. If you keep remembering how terrible you are, if you keep remembering you ran into a pole and you could have killed somebody, if you keep remembering how you've let your family and friends down, if you keep remembering, you know, that tough love thing, if you beat yourself up enough, you'll beat yourself up into sobriety. And it worked exactly the opposite for me. I had to forgive myself and be kind to myself. And I had to realize, there were four things, and I need to mention them because they were very, very important. One of them is that I had to separate myself from the behavior. Rather than telling myself, you know, I am a loser, I had to say, you know, I'm not a loser. In fact, I'm kind of a wonderful person, but I'm a person who's struggling with addiction. So not a loser, separate it. I'm a good person who's struggling with addiction. The second thing I really had to do is I had to remember that sobriety is not about self-control or discipline, because I am a fairly disciplined person and I'm fairly strong. But addiction is so much bigger than that. The pull is, it's crazy. And I finally believed that addiction's truly a disease, that my brain is wired differently. And so therefore, you know, I needed to treat the disease with the same amount of effort somebody would if they had cancer. And that change in my mindset was also very significant for my recovery. And then the third thing, and I can rattle these off because I talk about them all the time. The third thing was, you know, now that I know that it's not about discipline, I had to fully surrender. I had to say to myself, so many times, you know, I had given up so many times, but I kept saying, don't give up, don't give up, get back up, get back up. I was so exhausted. I was in so much pain from trying and failing. So instead I had to say, I had to tell myself not to give up, but I have to give in. And I mean give in as in surrender, that this is so much bigger than something I could solve with discipline and self-control. I had to surrender. And for me, I had to surrender to God. And then that fourth thing was I had to forgive myself. That was a major component of healing and growth. I had to let go of all that shame and guilt and move past it and move forward with my life. And all those things together shift.
Okay, Julie, we're going to go to commercial, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about that. So we're going to take a quick moment and recognize one of our sponsors. Women Lead Radio is brought to you today by Connected Women of Influence and our partner, Microsoft. The Microsoft mission is to empower every person and organization on the planet to achieve more. Microsoft believes technology is a powerful force for good and are working to foster a sustainable future where everyone has access to the benefits and opportunities created by technology. Microsoft believes technology can and should be a powerful force for good, and that meaningful innovation can and will continue to build a brighter world in big and small ways. Thank you for your support, Microsoft, and to all our sponsors and partners. So now back to our show. And Julie, we were talking about the difference between giving up and giving in. So giving in means you surrender to a higher power.
Yes.
But when you surrender, at least in my experience, before I am able to do that, I have to address my issue of control. Because I think that if I completely and totally surrender, I will be out of control. And control is always something I held on to so that I could feel safe. So how did you get to that point in a year and a half since you've stopped drinking, or almost 2 years, that you could actually take that step?
Along with this whole time I was attending meetings and such, I was trying this whole time, and I was, getting lots of wisdom in these meetings. It was an inside job that was screwed up. My insides were messed up, but all along the way, I had the people around me were so supportive. I had a counselor. She saw the dullness in my eyes. She saw the pain I was in. And even though she wasn't my counselor, she grabbed me and got me into a residential rehab. And even though I only attained another 9 months after that, that was the beginning for me. She affirmed me. These groups were really good. And my friends, I think they knew I was beating myself up enough. So they didn't, that's not how they treated me. They were much more like, what can we do to help? We know you're a great person. We've known you for a long, your whole life almost. What can we do to help? And people came to me in love instead of what the heck is wrong with you. And that really helped me. I think when I was giving up before I gave in, I had a night where I just did not want to be on this earth anymore. And it was very scary. And I wrote notes in my phone to my family and telling them goodbye, that I couldn't let them down anymore. And the next day I was just devastated. And that's when I was able to fully surrender to God, like, God, I can't do this anymore. And I don't want to die. And I don't want to leave my daughter. And I don't want to leave people. And I need your help. I mean, it was just, I have done everything. I've tried. I can't do this anymore. And I guess I really realized that it's not about me anymore. And all those things came into play and clicked. And it was almost from that moment on, everything changed. And it changed quickly. I mean, it just changed. There was no fight anymore. I didn't want to drink. I haven't wanted to drink at all. And not at all. There hasn't been a craving. There hasn't been I have no desire for that. I feel like I have a life now, and I really want to live it to please God, and I want to help others. And that's why I'm not panicked about this job situation, really, because I know he'll lead me where he wants me to be. And he is. I can see that already.
So were those that were closest to you able to forgive you when you made the decision to surrender and quit? Were they like, wow, this is so great, Julie? Or were there some of them that went, wait a minute, this, you know, because I think as humans, you know, you watch this person do all this stuff and then right on their deathbed, they go, I'm so sorry. And it's like, wait, hold up a second. No
and
way.
Over and over and over again. I said, I'm sorry. I'm going to do it. I'm doing well. I'm doing well. No, I wasn't. Or then I wasn't, I should say. And no, they believed in me over and over, and they were disappointed over and over again. They're watching this disaster, this train wreck happen in front of their eyes. So why would they believe me now? Fortunately, the people that live near me, they can see it. And they've watched the change, and I'm so fortunate that, you know, they've not only forgiven me, but they trust me. I'm sure at the beginning, there were, I know there were some situations where they were like, uh-oh, is she going to be able to handle this? There were actually four deaths of people I loved in a year. This is my, you know, first year of sobriety that I'm doing well, and four people that I loved died. And you know, rough, but they saw that I got through those things. They saw that whether I was around alcohol or not, or celebrations, or like I said, deaths or whatever, I was present again. They could see that I was solid. And so I think it's been much easier. You know, it's easy for them. They're watching it. They're witnessing this change. And I'm so grateful to them that they've been able to forgive me and trust me in all kinds of situations. You know, they let me take care of their pets, their people they love. I drive them. There isn't a question anymore. For people that aren't around me, that would be very hard. I don't know. That would be, why would they believe me? You know, I've done this too many times. So I think they probably, I can't speak for them. I think the people that don't live around me have probably forgiven me, but that doesn't mean that they're going to let me back fully into their lives. I mean, there's boundaries that I'm, you know, they probably have to stick with because I've hurt them so badly.
Well, when you look at the people that are around you today that support you and love you, do you think that they are able to do that more because they've done their own emotional and spiritual work to remind themselves that your journey is not theirs? Like, if I watch you self-destruct, I might be sad, but it's your choice. I mean, there is dignity when you allow someone the dignity to choose their life, whether I understand it or not. That takes a lot of my own personal growth to give you that grace. Have you seen that the people around you are doing their work as well as walking with you while you do yours?
That's a really interesting question. I've never actually thought about it like that. Good question, Susan. I don't know. I know some people, most of my relationships, let me backtrack, are very deep. You know, I have a lot of friends, and they're not superficial relationships. We talk heavy stuff every time we're together. Now, we also laugh a ton. But I mean, we don't talk about the weather and who played football game that weekend. We talk real stuff. And so maybe with our conversations, I don't know why. I haven't asked them how or why, to be perfectly honest. They've been able to do that. I don't know. Great question.
That wasn't even on my list either. That must have been a God thing. Okay.
Well, I know some of them have a deep faith, and so, you know, they might feel like, of course, they need to give me another chance. But again, I think it's because they're watching me, so that they feel comfortable. There's an ease now with me that wasn't there before. I don't know how you would do it if you're not witnessing it. If you don't see how grounded I am, I don't know how you would believe in me again.
Well, that definitely has to do with trust. You know, it has to do with, you know, how much do you trust someone who's already professed that they're, you know, it's like, don't listen to my words, watch my actions. Well,
exactly.
If they don't live
exactly.
Yeah, and if they don't live close, how can they watch your actions?
Right, right.
So that's an interesting journey for you and those that love you.
Yes.
So for the ones that had trouble, you know, the ones that said, I don't know, you know, what you did really hurt me. How did you give them grace to be angry while knowing you never intended to hurt them? You know, because sometimes what we do is like, well, I didn't mean it. Okay, but that doesn't take away the fact that what I did hurt you. So
right.
How do you give them grace?
Well, that's when I probably still beat myself up a little bit because if you're a black and white thinker, you say if somebody does something wrong or hurts you and they apologize, they need to change their actions. Well, I didn't change my actions didn't change. Now,
okay.
I may think addiction is bigger than most typical actions, but my actions didn't change. So, and I lied about my drinking. So black and white people will see that as an integrity or a character issue where I feel like people in addiction, that's pretty basic. They lie. You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They might be tying that into my character. And I didn't make the changes. The action wasn't seen. So I have to give them grace. Of course I give them grace. I hurt them. I hurt them so badly over and over again. They're afraid. You know, they don't want to get burned again. How many times you put your hand in the fire? Come on, you know. It's been over and over and over again. I have to be patient. This is now their journey. It's not mine. I've done what I can do.
Yeah, I think it has to do with being able to separate separate the disease from the person. So an alcoholic doesn't tell the truth. But you don't label them a liar. You say, he is an alcoholic. He has trouble with telling the truth. Just like you said earlier about, you know, I'm a beautiful person. I am not what I do. Those are behavior patterns that need to be addressed and healed. Core of me, I am a beautiful, loving human being. But if if somebody has dressed you in black and you're like, really, I'm this really fun, loving, playful. It's like, look at you. No, you're not. It's like you have to peel that off. So we who love alcoholics get to say that is the disease at play. That is not the person at play. That's the disease. So if we can separate that, I think what happens is that we think we're giving you free rein to do whatever you want because it's like, oh, that's just a disease. Well, okay, but there are boundaries as well, like you said. So I have, what has been your greatest lesson in this last 10 years?
Wow. That's a big question. There's been so many. Well, I've given myself the grace to know that, you know, I'm a flawed human and how I feel today will not necessarily will be how I feel 2 years from now, not even a year from now. I am a very open person and that is something that I now, what do I want to say? I'm not even sure the words, but it's important to me that I stay that way because I like to figure out what makes people tick. And as I ask other people for their perceptions, I always get a new outlook and a new understanding. And so maybe that's the biggest lesson is be very open-minded to other people's perceptions. Because once they explain why they feel the way they feel, there's a big, big growth in understanding. And every single person is different depending on how they were raised, you know, all the stuff that's happened to them. We've all got our own little story and reasons why we think the way we do. So where I might have said, well, that's just not right. Now I think, what is making them feel, how did they come to that conclusion? What happened to them or, you know, not necessarily bad, but how did that shape their thoughts? you know, what's going on
right.
in their lives. So I'm a lot more open. Be open to others and listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so curious when we're willing to be fluid in how we grow. Those
yes.
who have black and white thinking will often say, well, wait a second, 2 years ago you didn't believe that.
Right.
And they want to hold you to where you were and not to who you've become. They somehow
yes.
think that you're lying now because you don't carry the same belief from 2 years ago into the current situation. So it's like, wait a second, I've learned a lot. I've processed a lot. I've changed.
Right.
And so I think we need to give each other grace to be able to change our mind. I remember before I got involved in my own personal program, you know, I was never allowed to change my mind. You know, your word is your bond. Well,
mm-hmm.
that means we can't change our minds, but we're allowed to change our mind.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to come to a revelation where if I do that, I will continue to hurt. Therefore, I'm not going to do that anymore. So let's just, I have one more question. So what
wow.
advice would you, I know it's not, went fast. What advice would you give to someone who is in your same situation?
I try not to have any expectations with anyone anymore. I
okay.
need to just continue to keep my side of the street clean. And I mean,
okay.
we're talking about forgiveness. So as far as forgiveness, like I said,
mm-hmm.
this is their journey now.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they ever, you know, I think forgiveness is very complicated. It's a process. I think it's a
mm-hmm.
lot. It's a lot like grief in some respects, where one step forward, one step back. You go through different phases. You're up and down and all around. I think you can forgive and still have a resentment. You can forgive and not have a resentment, but maybe never let them back in. You can forgive and thoroughly move forward with somebody. I mean, there's all different shapes and forms of forgiveness. So for me, I just have to, not, like I said, no expectations, give them grace, know that it's their journey now, that I'm good, and it's up to them. So,
mm-hmm.
And try not to let it hurt, you know, too much. I mean, acknowledge the hurt, but
right.
then say it's out of my control. And for me, it's in God's control now. It's His timing,
right.
or not. You know, I
right.
might not get the answer I want ever, but I'm moving forward with my life and trying to be the best person I can be.
Well, it sounds like you have left the door ajar. You know, you haven't closed the door on anyone. You're,
oh, no,
the door
not at
is
all.
Ajar, and you're like, hey, if you want to come back in, you're always welcome. Because
yes.
we can't chase forgiveness. We it comes when it comes. Like you said, if it
yes.
comes. So just in case our listeners may want to reach out to you after the show, is there a way that they could contact you?
Yes, by my email, and that is H, as in Henry, Julie, J-U-L-I-E, it's 055@gmail.com.
Okay, so they can email you and say, I heard you on the show, and I'd love to ask you a question.
Absolutely.
Okay,
I love talking
cool.
to people. That's how I
okay.
learn.
It is. That's how we all learn. So
yes.
one of the things that I heard you say without using the word is gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Be gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Be
mm-hmm.
gentle with your hearts. Be gentle with your souls. Be gentle with yourself. And be gentle with each other.
Yes. Just like
so,
grace. Give grace to yourself and give grace to others.
Oh, I'm so glad. Everybody, I just want you to know, Julie used to live next door to me when we were kids. I was in love with her brother. But he wasn't in love with me. Bummer. Okay. So we've known each other a long, long, long time. So
long time,
thank you,
Susan.
Julie. Yeah.
You're welcome.
You were wonderful today. You were open and honest and real. And, yeah, now take a breath. So that's our show. Yeah, me too. That's our show for today. I'd like to say thank you to Julie for being our leading lady. Special thanks to all our listeners, both in the U.S. and internationally, as we are an international show. And remember, we'll be back again for another live Women Lead Radio show soon. It is my pleasure to be your host today. And to all our listeners out there, remember, you are not alone on your journey either loving an addict or being an addict. There is always hope, so please don't ever give up.
Thank you, Susan.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.